Hey, everybody. Frank Wassenberg here with episode 4 of the CX Experience in season 2. Very excited today. Thank you very much for having me. I am the CCAS practice leader for CloudLinks.
I am Kevin Sheehan. I am Frank's partner. I'm managing director of CloudLinks. Welcome to episode 4, A New Hope with Sharpen.
So we've got two guests on today from Sharpen. They were gracious enough to send over two guys into the firing pit here and get some questions thrown at them and ask some questions. We've got Rich Cordill, who is the Senior Director of Partnerships and Channels for Sharpen. And we've got Rick Kasiba, who is the Chief Data Scientist for Sharpen. Now, I got to tell you, you guys got some really nice titles, so I'm expecting a lot today. I'm not expecting kind of fluff answers. I'm expecting good stuff.
Also, and t-shirts, which is another thing that Frank will want in abundance. Yeah. In
what
XXL.
Happened with that? I thought I see two versions of a sweatshirt, a t-shirt there that I don't own. Like, what's going on?
This guy is addicted to swag like nothing you've ever seen.
I would say tell us your address, but I don't want the rest of the world to know your address as well. But if you privately send your address, then
I will. Sure. I will. But there's only 9 people that listen to the show anyway, so that's fine. So it wouldn't be that hard to find a problem.
We can send them a t-shirt too.
We'll send them a t-shirt too. Yeah, so, anyone, that's it. It's on film. Anybody who likes this YouTube video will get a Sharpen t-shirt sent from CloudLinks and Sharpen. That is my promise.
I love it.
And there we will go. Live up to that promise for you, buddy.
I love Thank it. You. I love it.
So tell us what size and what the address is, and we'll ship it on out.
Awesome. I love it.
Awesome.
Hey, so Rich, I guess I'll come to you first, Rich, mostly because your title's longer. So a general question, really, you know, people hear different things. People know different vendors in the industry. We know Sharpen pretty well. We've outside of interacting with you guys at trade shows, we've done some business together. It's been good for us. But why don't you just fill us in on kind of who is Sharpen and some of the philosophy of Sharpen?
Yeah. So Sharpen as a whole, as some of you may or may not know us, we are a CCAS provider. A handful of things that really kind of set us apart in terms of the market right now is we're a born in the cloud CCAS provider. We've been making our way in this industry for quite a while in terms of telco, UCAS, and everything else, but we really jumped into the CCAS space about 5 years ago now. And ever since, we've really been trying to take the industry by storm with our disruptive way about how we do things. And some of the things we'll be able to talk with you about this afternoon are really some of the things that we differentiate ourselves and our product with. Folks like Rick Kasiba, he's come on board in a very fiery way to really help set us apart in some of the things that he's been doing. But all in all, Sharpen is we're just a disruptive, I'm not going to say small player, but more of a kind of mid-tier player that's up and coming. We see ourselves playing with a lot of well-known names out there, and we're beating a lot of those well-known names as well. So very, very cool company to work for, very cool company to be at, and quite frankly, a lot of the team that we have, we continue to make a lot of waves in the industry. So,
yeah, the industry's it's an interesting right now. It's getting more and more crowded and differentiation is hard. We've run through a couple RFPs in the last couple months where the point spread on technical capabilities was minuscule. But then conversely, the point spread on the evaluations for usability, agent experience was massively swayed based on demos. So it's very interesting how I think when I first looked at you guys, where you were looking to make a differentiation on that agent experience. To me, that's a huge thing. Rick, I mean, what's the philosophy for Sharpen on that agent experience and where you're trying to make that life easier?
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't been here all that long. I just hit my first anniversary at Sharpen. And I got to tell you that one of the things, there are a couple things that brought me over to Sharpen. One of which is that whole agent first mentality. If you were to walk around the floor when we used to have a floor and people were working in the office, if you were to walk around the office and ask them who we were, virtually everybody would say, hey, we're the agent first platform. And what's neat about that is the whole company has internalized the idea that anything that we build is through the prism of making things better and making the experience better for the contact center agent and the management team. It's had some really cool results. One of which is talking to our customers you'll find that, like one of the first trips I ever made, I went and chatted with somebody, says, you know, hey, what do you think about Sharpen and how it's been working for you? He says, it's been great. Our attrition dropped. And I didn't think that was something you could affect with software, but he said, you know, all the frustration that we used to have with our old platform is gone because you guys build it for the contact center agent, which is really cool. And then the second thing that I really liked about Sharpen was the whole data infrastructure that we have. We have the ability to surface information and reports and data in a much, much easier way than all the big guys. So it's really kind of cool.
Sure.
Yeah. I just wanted to add one quick thing in there too, just around the agent experience and really why that's so important to us is if you just fundamentally take a step back and look at a contact center, and this is based on our own research and other analyst firms as well, but a contact center itself, customer satisfaction is really what everybody's striving for, right? A happy customer equals a return customer. And to today's day and age with all of the options out there, I mean, hell, even in CCaaS, right? You can go out there, if you're not happy for one reason or another, you can go find a replacement just like that. So what we have found is that customer satisfaction has a direct correlation to agent satisfaction, wherein if you have a happy agent, you have a happy customer as a byproduct of that, and vice versa. If you have an agent who's frustrated by the tools that they're working with, they're frustrated because they can't do their job effectively, they don't feel empowered, all of those little basic things, then as a byproduct of that, you've got unhappy customers, which is ultimately what leads to people leaving. And that's one of the primary things that contact centers are trying to do, is increased customer experience, customer satisfaction.
We were actually interviewed ourselves yesterday by a management consulting podcast who was asking us how we sort of found our way into this space and talking about why we enjoy working with call centers so much. And our short answer was, you know, it's not a commodity sale at all, because you're really working with so many different parts of an organization to understand why they do what they do, how they make money, how do their employees succeed, what the general, you know, the whole life cycle of that organization, and how it all comes together. That's all affected by the call center. We touched upon retention, which is something that you never would have thought is a major factor, but we gave a reference of a small home improvement company. It's a very well-known national name, who we worked with last year. And when we first had a general meeting with all their department heads, the HR people came in and we asked them, you know, so how's HR? What are you looking to get out of a new platform? And he's like, we're currently cruising with roughly a 99% attrition rate. And Frank and I looked at each other and we're like, meaning you keep 99% of your staff on a monthly or annual basis? And he's like, annual. And we're like, oh, that's pretty good. He's like, no, we lose 99% of our staff in an annual cycle. This is a call center of about 200 agents. No joke. Nice. He literally said that. Yeah. And like, you could take that, how much of an effect that is to an organization's bottom line. But you also look at it from an agent's perspective. And these are, you know, very hardworking people, hardworking middle-class income people who are trying to carve out a career for themselves. And a very difficult job. And, you know, giving them a platform that allows them to feel successful and also to make more money. Like, if an agent is successful, one assumes that they're making more money and living a better life and feeling better about themselves. I mean, that should be something that I think that CCaaS providers talk more about and less about. You know, you're going to get more customers, your customers are going to have a better experience, your customers are going to, you know, have quicker hold time, whatever. But like, your agents who do a very tough job will have better lives if you give them the tools to become successful. So good. Absolutely. good for you guys. We're excited to talk about that. It's coming up more and more.
Well, yeah. I'm sorry, Richard.
No, I was just going to add one little comment to that is we certainly see that across the board. What we've kind of found is industry average for a contact center for attrition is around 50%, which, I mean, we've seen upwards of 150%, which is just insane. And then when you correlate that to your point, the cost, On average, what we found is it's about $10,000 to $15,000 to replace an agent by the time you counter the getting someone on board, ramping them up, training them, just going through that entire process. So take all that into equation, and then you throw them into a world where they're frustrated because the agent tool set that they have to work with isn't giving them what they need to do their jobs.
Right.
And then they get frustrated, they get fed up, and then they quit their job because they can't do the day-to-day tasks and requirements that they need. Yeah. But to that point, Rick, I'll certainly let you chime in. I know you've got more insightful things to say.
No, I don't know. I don't know about that, Rich. But
no, it's very.
A funny story was attrition is something you absolutely, if you can improve it just a smidge, you save the company a lot of money. I was at a place a long time ago where I went in there and started talking the attrition story, and they said, no, we don't have much attrition. I've never heard of a call center who didn't have a lot of attrition, right? Yeah. It was the Social Security Administration. And they said, our main source of attrition is retirement or death. Those are the two. Nobody quits this job.
Nobody quits this job. It's perfect. It's the greatest job ever.
Job is perfect, yeah. But but when you think about it nowadays, this whole agent first thing and making things easy for an agent. Think about it in the time of COVID. We all went from call centers being call centers to almost every call center in the U.S. at least being work at home. And think about that. You have 50% of attrition on, and that's a good one, right? You have 150% and that's a bad one. You're doing all of your training while they're sitting in their living room. That is really, really hard. In the old, funny story is my wife we moved to Indianapolis to be work in the Sharpen building. And right now I think I'm one of three people in the building.
Sure.
So my wife, who was a teacher, we found a call center job. She's doing COVID tracking for the state of Indiana right now. And so she had to learn how to be a call center agent. And she did it out of our front living room. And what's funny about it is things that are super, super simple. I want to know how to merge two calls or something like that. She has to actually find the right person in a company that she's never met anybody in person. And, it used to be you could turn to the agent next to you and say, hey, how do you do this? Right. And they'd say, oh, you just click this and you drag it over there. It's like she can't do that because
now they're home eating. It doesn't exist. Calls.
Yeah. 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 And so building a system for an agent is really, really important in this kind of environment. For my wife, it's not that easy. I think when I talk to our customers, I think they find it much, much easier because everything's just so intuitive. It's built for the agent. Right.
And that's the key. I mean, I've used this in the past. Kevin has this philosophy that he's built, and I really adopted it now, is that if you enable the agents, you make them able, you enable them to carry your mission statement forward, right? And we've used this on a lot of the conversations. It's true, right? That's the core of it, right? If you want them doing what you want to be doing well, you have to enable them, right? You have to make it powerful for them. You have to make it usable for them. And not just the normal gamification, kind of motivational stuff. No, to me, Rick, you're on the track of this system has to be intuitive. It has to present them with clean data. It has to enable them to function simply and not take up all the real estate on their screen so that they can't do anything else, right? I mean, you want it to be in there, seamless, and not popping up 12 screens. I mean, that's the goal.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. The other thing is how do you go about managing a workforce? Again, my wife has never met her supervisor. How do they go about managing things? In the old days, right? Old days being 6 months ago, 9 months ago, we used to walk the floor, right? You'd walk around and your contact center manager. I actually heard a story from right before COVID. I went out to visit one of our customers, and they had this really cool call center, really great manager, and he gave me the big tour of the call center. It was great. 4 weeks later, he's like, I've lost all intuition. I used to be able to look out my window and see who's showing up late. I used to be able to walk the floor and say, hey, that person's having a tough time with a call. You could just look at them and, you'd walk over and hang out with them after the call and say, hey, how are things going? What did you hear? What's happening? Take a break, that kind of stuff. So all this human contact is gone. So how do you go about managing folks without that. And now we have to do it through numbers. And so Frank, you were talking about, you know, getting numbers onto a screen. That becomes really important, because you have to be able to tell an agent what's important to them, given that you can't tell them anymore, you know, in any kind of casual way. So that's why we like this performance management piece that we've just recently added to the system, which is simple. Managers put numbers in front of an agent and say, hey, try to beat these. And they're present. They're not, you know, they're not crazy or anything, but they sit in front of an agent when they're not on a call, and they can say, hey, how am I doing relative to my peers? Or how am I doing, you know, relative to our goal? Or, you know, where am I ranked? That kind of stuff. And it's shocking the kind of improvement you get when you simply show agents how they're doing.
You're putting a Game of Thrones element into this, right? Getting excited. Now you're putting a challenge in front of them to say, it's not just gamification, because gamification is cool, right? It's cool. You get an avatar, you redeem some awards, rewards. But now you're sitting there saying, okay, the person two doors down from me, or now two states away from me, or whatever, is doing better than me. That person's kicking my butt. I need to get better. Or the reverse. That person's doing poor. Build that person up. How do we get them together as a team? Because, you know, you're kind of joking around about it, but, you know, that Jedi sense is gone for the agents now and for the managers now, and they have to manage performance remotely. And I've often, you know, I look at dashboards, I look at the gamification stuff, and it always is lacking some sort of personalization, I think, for the agent to really get invested in it. You know, because they as much as a person wants to be motivated, you always kind of, the top 20% of your performers, they're gonna do what they're gonna do anyway. And the bottom 10-15%, you're not gonna motivate them. You know, it's that middle group that you're really gonna strive, and they're really gonna, to Kevin's analogy earlier, they're that group that's trying to make a better life for themselves. So they want to improve. Is this tool focused on that group of people, or is it? Do you have some other secret sauce that's kind of driving the needle?
No, let me tell you the secret sauce. It's almost a minimalist approach. We went out. We were thinking about partnering with a gamification company, and so we went and talked to a few, and we heard something that was actually really interesting, which was all of them said something to the effect of, you know, the avatar stuff. You know, that's nice. It's cool, you know, it's okay. We find that our customers get most of the benefit by just showing them their numbers. That was it. That's it. If you show them the numbers, that gets 95% of the value that we get out of gamification. It's not the games, it's not the board shorts that you can put on your avatar or buy a little puppy or whatever it is, you know, for your avatar. That stuff, it's okay. But you get all of your value from simply showing people their numbers. And so this minimalist approach is simply to show them their values. Maybe there's a little message that pops up that says, hey, you're doing great. You know, hey, you know, here's some things that you can do to improve. It's just very basic stuff. And it almost treats agents like adults. And that's the thing that we like about this sort of approach. Another thing too,
Treat them like people.
The other thing, a piece to it is we sort of feel like you shouldn't have to buy something else in order to use, you know, to use performance management, right? You don't need to be buying, you know, yet another system. What you can do is you buy our product and it's there. It's just part of what we do. And so you're about to talk, Rich.
No, I was going to say, Rick, I'd love to just highlight, because I know you're the numbers guy, and we keep talking about numbers here, numbers there.
Yeah.
Based on nothing more than what we've experienced, if you could, and I know these nuggets are buried right there in the front of your brain.
I don't know about that.
But just highlight some of the things that, like, we have customers, as an example, who come on board with Sharpen, and they have this kind of instantaneous honeymoon effect of, oh, this is wonderful, this is great. And then, lo and behold, we turn on these kind of performance metrics that we do, and the numbers we get back are staggering, just in terms of the customer calling us up and saying, holy cow, guys, you guys have saved us upwards of $1 million a year little things, little improvements here and there. But just touch on that,
because I was at your website. I was going to ask a question about the website where you have the 5 to 15% ROI statement. I mean, you guys are throwing this out there.
Oh, yeah, this is really cool. When we turned performance tiles on, one of the things that we did that I think was pretty smart was we started measuring everybody's performance. So when we threw this out as a beta, the first thing we did is we started gathering data and looking at how the beta customers were doing pre-tiles. And then we turned on the performance tiles, and And we watched it. Now, we were expecting to see a couple things. We were expecting to see this little slow, gradual improvement, which is really hard to measure, you know, given seasonality in businesses and everything. But we didn't see that at all. We didn't see a slow, gradual improvement at all. What we saw is an instantaneous improvement at every single customer on almost every single metric that we that they showed their agents, which is really cool. And it wasn't insignificant. I don't have the numbers at the top of my head, but it was something on the order of one of our customer 9% of handle time immediate from the day they turned it on. They suddenly got a 9% improvement in the handle time. Another fun one was another customer turned on first call resolution and a handle time, and lo and behold, both improved. And you would think that first call resolution is not something that an agent could really, really affect, but lo and behold, they do, or you know, and they can, and we have the data to show it. You think about, you just do the math on the number of avoided calls that you have to take because you handled the customer's problem and they didn't call back, and the numbers, it's staggering. It's really, really interesting and cool. So we're feeling a little cocky about it, right? You turn these things on, and lo and behold, you're gonna see an improvement, and we've seen it 100% of the time, and it's not little, it's significant. So the 5 to 15%, we're going to get, you know, we've seen bigger than that, and we're willing to put our money where our mouth is. It's what does it say on the website? 5 to 15%, all your money back, every single penny, no questions asked, no fine print. And we mean it.
It's
actually really cool. Our CEO came up with this. He's one of those kinds of people who, he just sort of cuts through the BS and is, you know, painfully honest. And he's like, yeah, we'll give them their money back. It's, you know, we're going to see the savings, and we should never have to, you know, give anybody their money back, because it's pretty obvious that we're going to nail it.
So, and now the performance management stuff, the tiles, which obviously, if you can send me some of the clips on those, because I'd like to insert them into the video for people that are watching this. I'd like to show them what we're talking about, because it's kind of cool to see it. Yeah, I'd like to see it while we're doing it again and give some reference to it. But is that a standard function of the tool, or is that part of a QM bundle? Or talk to me about that a little bit, because I know you said you that was part of your philosophy. You don't want to have people do that and buy extra tools, but you know, everyone kind of the devil's in the details on this kind of a thing.
No, you have it. You go to a little admin area, and you click a little button that says turn these things on, and here are the metrics I want to see, and here's the thresholds for them, and boom, it shows up on the agent's desktop. It's as simple as that.
Now, do you think that, I mean, if you had to do it, where would you put, in terms of ranking, you know, the top challenges that contact centers are facing today, COVID or not, what are they facing? What are their struggles?
Yeah, I do think the biggest one is that lack of human contact. It's I was actually on a webinar last week, and one a gal who was she had some fantastic questions and thoughts, had this one, which is, how do you maintain a company culture given that nobody sees each other anymore? And I think forget just call centers, all of us who are now, you know, working from home, it's really tough. All the casual conversations that we used to have that would help make us a cohesive unit and make work fun, and that's all gone. It's now everything that we have to do is purposeful, and it's hard enough when we're a management team or we're software providers and we're working together. It's kind of tough. I don't see you nearly as much as I used to, Rich, and
pluses and minuses to that.
Good, yeah. Pluses and minuses, right? And but think about it. If you're running a contact center with somebody that you've never ever met, who just onboarded last week because you know half your workforce disappeared over the last 6 months, that's really, really hard. And maintaining any kind of culture, maintaining real quality, you know, in showing empathy and all that stuff is really hard. I'm seeing it with my wife, who's now a call center agent in our front living room, right? So that, I think that's the biggest thing. How do you go about managing and inspiring people, given that you never see them in person? I think that's probably the biggest challenge that we're all facing now. I think at first, when we all went to work at home, we were shocked, utterly shocked that we could all pull it off so quick. You know, the biggest challenge that anybody faced you know, back in March was, how do I procure enough laptops and headsets so I could, you know, send this home with all my agents, right? And so that happened. It all worked out real well. It was, you know, shockingly smooth, mostly because of all the cloud computing that's out there now. So that was really cool. But now what we're finding is that it's a lot harder to manage than we thought it would. You know, we thought it was going to be, what, 2 weeks, right? You know?
Oh, my gosh. Now, don't even get me started.
Yeah, now it's 9 months into it, and it's hard, and it wears. It's not something that you know, if it had it been temporary, you know, we would have weathered it pretty well. But now that it seems mostly permanent, especially for, you know, contact centers, I think it's going to be a lot harder, right? Because it's this culture stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You bring it up. I mean, I think it was, I, you know, here in New York, you know, the fall off the back of the truck analogy gets used to death. But like at that first 3 weeks of it, I think people were selling headsets out of the back of trucks. I mean, they were gold. They were gold. And I can't even imagine, like, we did a project where when this started for a big medical center, where in 60 days, they said to us, we're taking everybody and everyone's out of here, because they were kind of foreshadowing what was going to happen. And they said, in 60 days, we cannot be in this office. We're predicting this is going to be an issue. And in 60 days, we had to transition them out. And that was their biggest challenge. One, getting the equipment. And two, onboarding new agents. So you hit the nail on the head for what they were seeing in the real world.
You know what? There's a lot of questions about whether it is going to return to that type of environment. You know, we could say, look, COVID's dead, we're all vaccinated, but some of the feedback we've gotten from C-level people is, yeah, now they're looking at, why do we have to pay $100,000 a month for that facility when we don't have to? I get it, it's great to see people and everyone, you know, it's great, but it's a lot of money. We've shown, you know, now the world has woken up that there are tools like Sharpen, platforms like Sharpen, that enable an organization to keep running very effectively and to have many of the tools that allow them to perform like they are working together. You know, I think it's going to be a long time before somebody starts making that investment and bringing people back together.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of CFI right or wrong.
Yeah. One of the conversations Rick and I had, this is probably 3 or 4 months ago, was not even that whole concept of work from home, but more than anything is work from anywhere. And giving people the option, the ability to just say, hey, my family's going to go on a vacation, and my responsibility as an agent, I can basically take my 4-hour hiatus from the beach and go sit down in the condo and kind of do my job, my responsibilities and everything else. And after I'm done, I turn my laptop off and I get back to my family time.
Dude, I mean, if I didn't know this was going to go this long, I'd have taken up Antigua or those other countries. I'd have been gone. We're going to be at a year now. We're 9 months now almost, right? Right. It's almost 9 months. We're going to be there. It's absolutely crazy. And now recruitment is a challenge too, because the call center is a massive job spike, right? And we talk about a lot of how I think technologies like you guys and bringing the costs down are enabling these jobs to come back to the United States.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think that's a legitimate byproduct of what we're seeing now, that people want to have, first thing they want to do is get comfort from knowing where they're, you know, that they're talking to someone that understands them well. Now the companies want to give them that. Now, how do they afford that? You know, labor costs are what they are. You know, it's nothing to be hidden there, but the technology enablement is really powerful to bring this stuff back here to all these unemployed people.
Absolutely. And to just touch on that quite simply from a Sharpen perspective is our entire philosophy just around pricing and everything else is just simplifying that burden of contract negotiations and everything else. Our price is very transparent to what it is. Everything's bundled into that one simple cost. Our quoting and our contracting, another thing, very transparent, very simplistic. So ultimately, when you put it in front of a customer, they don't have to sit there and spend 4 months doing red lines, but rather, hey, you need a contact center, you need it today, and you need folks up and running by a certain period of time that's very quick, then absolutely, let's get this going right now. I mean, that is one thing that customers have raved to us about is hold on, you mean if I want this feature, I don't have to give you another little nominal fee? Or if I want that feature, I have to give you another little nominal fee? Like, you're telling me right now to my face that this is the price, and that's a flat price, fixed price for everything? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, All right. I've been asking people this for years.
How kind of, like, let's talk about that. Like, so like this all-in-one approach for you guys, which I find interesting because, again, I've just been through a couple RFPs and the add-ons kill you, right? Yeah. How deep into the stack can you guys go in terms of your offerings? I mean, you know, CCaaS seats, UCaaS seats, QM, like how deep into the stack are you bringing it to clients?
Yeah. So purely from a kind of a basic perspective, all-in-one really encompasses is everything from a telecom perspective. So we are the underlying telco provider. We provide UCaaS seats to back-end users or anybody who just needs basic UCaaS. And we also provide the contact center seat, which that in and of itself is obviously incredibly complex. There's a lot of functions that go into a contact center. But if you just look at that in and of itself, we're the all-in-one play as well. So we are the agent desktop and all of the tools that they need to perform their jobs, the omni-channel play, as Rick had pointed out, some of the performance metrics. We provide all of the back-end supervisory functions, so all the reports that they need to run, dashboards that they need to build, whether it's a dashboard for a hypothetical call center that no longer exists on a wall board, or if it's a dashboard to send to an executive that he can put on his desktop, or a dashboard that we can send off to a supervisor that they can have on their iPad. All of those things go into it. And then taking that a step further, just all of the other elements of coaching and feedback and bi-directional feedback and taking that all encompassing. I mean, quite honestly, I could sit here and talk for the next hour and a half about all of the features within a contact center alone. But quite simply, if you sign up with Sharpen, you don't need another provider to come in and fill in as an IVR or the ACD. Or I know that's not necessarily commonplace today, but it used to be, oh, I've got this for my IVR, I've got this for my ACD, I've got this over here for my QM and everything else. I mean, we truly are you sign up with Sharpen, you get all the stuff right there in one pretty box.
I mean, a couple of vendors have gone the way of best of breed. You know, I do CCaaS really well, but I'm going to partner with this guy for WFM and I'm going to partner with this guy for QM. And there's merits to that, but there's also the other side of the coin where it's like, listen, no, we want to be in control of the agent experience. We want the client to have one conversation. We don't want them thinking about back-end integration and reportings and all those challenges that are there. To me, there's a lot of merit to that.
Yeah. And I guess to just kind of build on that too, I will say, so we are all in one, but we're not all or none either. So I would argue that just in terms of reporting, agent desktop, and again, a lot of the tools we've talked about, we're just right up there with best of breed. Like what we have in terms of a product that competes with enterprise grade products, much the same as us, we're right there. But we fully recognize that folks may say, hey, you know what? I really like this for my UCaaS play, or I really want to integrate to this WFM provider over here. We fully acknowledge that the customers want choices, and as such, all in one, but not all or none. So if you want to use us for the contact center and layer in somebody else for UCaaS, by all means, let's have that discussion.
Okay.
The industry bellwethers, certainly if you go back a couple of years, we've noticed the add-ons were, I think, the profit margin for most deals, in that it was almost like a car sale where it's like, just get them to commit. And then once they're committed, then all the extras start getting layered and layered on. And that's where the margin was. And that for a long time, that's been the pricing model, and it's still out there. And you guys are in the minority still with that bundle.
Yeah. That's the greatest Seinfeld bit ever. What's the rust coating on the bottom? I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
Well, you bring up such a great point, right? It's like, here, I want to sell you a car. Perfect. Let's go test drive it. And you test drive and you're like, hold on a second. This has an AM FM radio.
Yeah.
There's no analog brakes. What? I mean, hell, this thing doesn't even have headlights. And then all of a sudden you're like, well, you didn't ask for headlights. What do you mean I didn't ask for headlights?
Of course I want headlights. I want to drive at night.
I can sell you headlights. Here, sure you go. Here you go. They're $500 a pop. Wait, $500 a pop? And then all of a sudden you keep adding all these things up, to your point. And then you get the bill as far as what you were actually given in a demo, right? And then all of a sudden it's like, hold on, I thought this was $100 a seat. by the time you add everything up, it's like, this is more like $200 a seat. And quite honestly, that's one of the things that I love to highlight about our demos is you have a CFO or somebody who kind of knows how the game works, who sits there and watches a demo of a product, and they know full well as they watch a typical demo, they're going to sit there and add up line item after line item after line item. So yeah, $100 a seat, but what we actually just showed you is more to the tune of 250 because we gave you everything. Well, that's the nice thing about Sharpen is you watch a demo of what we have to offer and what we can do to improve their contact center. And then, by the way, we tell you at the very end that everything you just saw right there is all wrapped up in that price that we publish on our webpage, so it's not hidden from anybody. I mean, that's very compelling stuff that people really say, wow, this is significant.
Yeah, yeah. It takes the teeth out of something that we often use as a business case to work with us, is that the team of people, if you want to talk about the players in that magic quadrant, the team of people that you deal with pre-sale are completely different than the team of people you're working with post-sale. And that's when the bad news starts to come trickling, right, especially around add-ons. We position ourselves as, hey, we're your sort of guarantee that we're going to hold the pre-sale team accountable to the post-sale implementation. But if a disruptor like Sharpen is out there saying, no, the price is on our website, it's right, you know, we're willing to, and we're willing to back that up with, to Rick, to your analogy or your story from the CEO saying, yeah, you know, if you're not happy with the platform, yeah, we'll give you your money back. You know, it's,
yeah, I gotta tell you, it's really nice being at a company like Sharpen. This, what Rich just explained, it is really kind of fun. You know, when you're working in an environment where you're at one of these other players, it feels a little dirty, right? It's one of those things where, you know, you got it in your back pocket that there's going to be some more charges that we're going to, you know, pull out for you a little later. That doesn't feel good. It's much more fun to work in and be honest about everything, I think.
Sure. Frank and I want to pull a Borat where we disguise ourselves as sales reps and sit in on like one of the annual sales kickoffs.
Rick, we're just gonna need you to be the camera guy in the back with the hidden camera in the briefcase.
Totally in.
You're in. Rick's in. Kevin,
what is this upsell? Explain, please.
Now you look at this now, and again, I think Kevin hits it right. You got where our secret sauce is kind of holding everyone's feet to the fire and making sure that what's sold is what's given and there's no hidden costs. And we do a lot of that work, right? And kind of it's part and parcel with the other side of the coin for us, where we make sure that everybody in the organization is speaking the same way about what they want. The CFO, the CEO, the CTO want the same thing all the way down the chain to that agent, right? Do you guys see, I mean, you've been through a lot of implementation, I got to imagine. Do you see that as a major challenge for clients to get everyone singing from the same hymnal and get everyone kind of wanting the same stuff?
Heck yeah. And I think that's why you guys are so valuable, right? Is, you know, working with folks like you, it makes it easier for us too, right? Because you're not going to sell them the wrong thing. You're not going to screw something up. So, you know, we're big fans of that.
Yeah, it just makes sense, I think, because getting them all wanting the same thing, getting them all seeing the same thing on the back end is important. Now, let's dig into a little bit of your experience here, because I don't want to keep you all day, but I mean, I'd like to hear that. Where are you seeing mistakes being made in the contact center? Where are you seeing, either on the vendor side or on the client side, where are you seeing things to avoid?
Good question. I don't know if I have it's funny. I just wrote an article for a workforce management group, SWPP, which is a fantastic organization. And one of the articles I was sort of relating an experience where folks think they're buying something that's, you know, the article is about AI and a lot of the stuff that was being promised hadn't really been developed before, or it was an environment where people are selling things that that don't quite exist yet, and they're using the customer as the guinea pig.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible place to be, either both the customer and the vendor, in that sort of situation where something's been sold that you don't know if it'll actually work yet.
Rick, we just did a deployment for a client, an evaluation of a tool for a client. Let me rephrase. And one of the things they wanted to do in phase two was voice recognition, because they hate voice recognition, right? But they hate it. They've always hated it. But they want to put it in for phase two for an element that is really static information that's a waste of time for the agent to do it. And we're going through the evaluation, and the recognition bot was having something like a 75% incorrect rate on understanding people's last names. And during the demo, it worked like a charm. But when we were going through the development and trying to go through the test, 75% of the names were being misrepresented, misinterpreted by the system. Now, to me, that's unforgivable, right? It's you can't get a product out there that's 70% wrong. And people don't know what they don't know. They don't have the experience out there to see what's there and to see this sort of stuff, right? You think a voice recognition bot's going to understand it because I speak into my cell phone and I can dictate text messages. Right. It should be easy. But these technologies are hard, and they rely on so many outside parties to get right.
Right. And it's interesting. Sometimes the vendor doesn't know that will work or not, right? So they're walking in, and it's an experiment for them just as it is an experiment for the customer. And my little article was basically saying, here are some things that you should do to hold their feet to the fire, you know. Some rules of thumb, you know, on AI. If they start asking you for a lot more data than what you gave them already, that means that their models aren't quite working yet, right? Those are things that they need to keep an eye out for, because it's pretty, it's a sketchy sort of environment when people are proving their technology with your money.
Sure. Now, you hit the nail on the head there. That's an article I'm going to look for, actually. I want to read that article because, you know, that mostly because I'll just make it my own, obviously. But
have any of us ever in our history working in this industry ever seen a company that says, oh, that will be ready for prime time Q whatever next year? Yeah. You know? And well, it's coming Q2 next year, that'll be ready. It's never, if for everyone who's watching this, it's never ready Q2 next year.
Yeah. Well, that's 100%.
Yeah, the one thing, though, that I'm not tooting my horn or our horn too much here is the one thing. It's great working for somebody like our CEO, Bill, who, if we promise something and we don't deliver, it's like, great, you know, we're not delivering our promise here. Turn the thing off. We'll give you some cash back. He's been really good about that.
Now, Rich, on the same question to you in terms of you're in the partner channel.
Yeah.
You're trying to get adoption. You know, I've been through these kind of boot camps with agents and master agents, and they talk about how many guys just look at it and kind of their eyes glaze over because it's a whole different vernacular. It's a whole different conversation. You don't know what you don't know. Where are you seeing mistakes on that side of the fence and the partners trying to get into this?
I mean, quite honestly, I think there's a lot of partners who come from the telco UCaaS side of the world. And they jump into this and they think that it's going to be easy, and we all know that it's not. Now it's easier than it once was. I think cloud sales, just in terms of the complexities of it, it's a lot more simplistic to be able to talk about. It's a lot more simplistic to be able to get that introductory conversation going, because the buy-in is less significant. You no longer have to commit $1.5 million up front, but you just have to commit $50,000 up front to get things kind of going. But all of that said, I think one of the things that people miscalculate is that you just have to do a little bit of due diligence to get your feet off the ground and get the vernacular, to your point, around how to talk the talk and walk the walk. What are the right buyers? I mean, quite frankly, a lot of the buyers are the same folks. I think it's just a matter of getting out there and asking the right questions. And as far as the right questions, I mean, there's a lot of probing factors out there right now in terms of why it's so easy to flip from one contact center to the other. I think some of those could be just general support. I know you'd mentioned Gartner earlier. A lot of the folks that are in Gartner right now, they keep trying to push up market, which is great. But as they push up market, their mid-market customers feel slighted. They don't feel the same love that they once did when they were first sold. And as a byproduct of it, they're looking for somebody who actually cares about their needs and their concerns and really wants them to be successful. And that's where folks like Sharpen come in and say, hey, we would love to show you how much we care about you. You are not just number one of 15,222. You're number one in our books. I mean, that's how we really pride ourselves in our organization as a whole, is the high touch mentality we have, not just from a sales perspective, but from an ongoing perspective on our client success managers. They sit down with our customers and really do a fantastic job of delivering. And sure. I know I've kind of gone off on a tangent to your initial question, but I think
sales
one of
guys,
the things,
sales guys, Kevin,
one of the things that I think is just a challenge, if you will, in contact centers is, yeah, it's a little more difficult than what you once did, but if you just take a little bit of time to figure out what this space is and kind of what the things are that matter to contact centers, a la agents. I mean, that's your number one expense in a contact center. It's not the technology. It's not the office space. It's not the laptop or the headset. I mean, it's the actual agent themselves. And really sitting back and showing that you care about that agent and the fact that you want them to be successful and you want to make them feel empowered so that they then in turn can do their job more effectively. I mean, that really makes a huge impact. People want to, I'm not sure who'd said it earlier, but people want to be better. So much so that we have had agents unprompted call us and say, ever since I saw these metrics be presented to me in my day to day, I see how I'm doing and I see how I'm improving it. And I blank you not, we had an agent who quite literally said, it makes me want to be a better agent. I mean, that kind of gives you, it gives you goosebumps and you're like, holy cow, we are making a difference in people's lives.
That's great. So. Now, Rick, the $1 million question to you, as I've been staring at your office the whole time, What team is that in the back on the champs, the champion photo? What is that?
Oh man, that is the Crofton Cardinal 11-year-old football team.
That's what I thought it was. I actually texted Frank that's what it was. But
yeah. You were the best, you were right. I'm sitting there going, what team is that in the background? Who is that? That's what they win. What championship did they win?
This was Anne Arundel County. What was it? We have on there, that is. Oh, 11, 2000, that's the 2000, I have 2009, I have 2012 and 2019 Anne Arundel County football champs. So
look at that. That's
this, yeah. Man. Those are my boys. Those are my boys. It's so fun. So I've been doing this, this youth football coaching thing for a long, long time. And God, it's just, you just love each one of those boys. You stick with them for a few years. They're just fantastic kids.
It's great. It's great. And youth football, I mean, listen, youth football's taken, you know, it's taken a beating during this period of time now, trying to get this back. But I do a lot of coaching myself, and I coach soccer, even though I don't know what the heck I'm talking about with soccer. And I coach basketball, because that's my sport. And I couldn't do it. My wife and I run the local CYO program, and we turned it off this year. We couldn't do it. Oh. You just didn't see a way to do it in the gyms and, you know, these things. But yeah. I miss coaching basketball like I can't imagine. Were you able to get some stuff in this year? Or
No. Well, when I moved to Indianapolis, this is from Maryland, where I moved from. Interestingly enough, I called somebody yesterday, and there's a local team that needs some coaches, so I'll start it up again.
Nice. Be careful. That's, I posed that question.
So just in terms of coaching soccer, I mean, isn't it pretty straightforward? Like, hey, kids, for the next 30 minutes, we're going to kick it into that goal, and then
Frank,
30 minutes later,
Frank,
you say,
applies,
hey, guys.
Frank applies the same coaching direction he gives to the basketball team, except with a Cockney accent. Anything said that covers it.
Start speaking English.
Yeah. I have found that I can coach soccer very, very effectively up until around sixth, seventh grade. And then right around sixth, seventh grade, the kids have a need to be so much more technical and so much
the
more.
The game becomes skills based.
And the then game it's becomes like skills based, and I can't fluff them. I can't bullshit the kids anymore. So I got to stop. So now I move to an assistant coach, and I'm the motivational guy on the team now, but that's it.
Nice.
But listen, Kevin, what do you have to hit me with now before we end?
He starts every season by making the third grade soccer team watch the old 80s soccer movie, Victory, with Pele and Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Listen, if you're not motivated by that and the Karate Kid, then you're not motivated by anything. But listen, guys, we've had you on for a bunch here. I don't want to keep you too long. I know it's the middle of the day for you guys, or the start of the day for where you guys are. So is there anything that you kind of want to close out with that you can think of that you really want to leave people with, or some last minute advice as you're looking at CCAS?
I'll kind of give my two cents. I mean, it is a very, very crowded space. As a matter of fact, I was just talking to a colleague of mine from a former company who works at another CCAS provider just the other day. And we were talking about how, is there really that much business out there? And it's a great question, because everybody always forecasts like, oh, this is going to be a $25 billion industry in the next couple of years. And I don't disagree, but at the same time, it's the biggest challenge is getting people to recognize the need for change. The biggest challenge is getting people to break away from their status quo and truly recognize that this next generation of cloud contact center, a la Sharpen and the such, it can truly help transform their business and more or less future-proof them. Because if you guys know as well as I do, right? You can play the NES as long as you want, but you know you're missing out on the next big thing. And much the same as
it is a reference.
You're missing all sorts of possibilities. And when it goes longer and longer and longer, that Band-Aid gets stickier and stickier, and it makes it harder to peel off in that process. And I think it's just the ability to walk in and understand that customers, they want to transform their business. They just need people to nudge them in the right direction.
I agree. What about you, Rick?
I can't improve upon what Rich just said. That's it.
I'm with you. I couldn't either. Good night, everybody. Good morning.
No, that's great.
Good night. That's
probably the best sound bit that we could use.
Nice. So, guys, listen, thank you very much. I really appreciate you being on. I really do. I appreciate you giving Kevin the opportunity to make jokes at my expense about my coaching skills. I appreciate that. Thank you. And we'll wrap it up there. No, thank you very much.